And with no further introduction, a resumption of our interview with Rob Nyer.
One of the other problems that baseball has, which you mentioned frequently in the book, is reducing the length of games and the things they're trying to do to get to shorten games. And one of the things, as an older fan, I guess, is that, which is not relevant to today's fans, I understand, that you go to games to get away, to spend time at the ballpark, to enjoy yourself away from everything, to concentrate on the game, which, thanks to social media and cell phone, now I'm really starting to sound like an old man, you know, you're constantly on your phone, you can look things up in real time while you're watching the game, and I also don't know for some people what the point is in going to the games.
Yes, I mean, I certainly have had that experience as well. It really, a lot of that depends on who you're sitting near. I would say for the most part, when I'm at the ballpark, the people around me seem to be focused, generally speaking, on the game and seem to be there because they really enjoy baseball or they love this particular team, whatever it might be. Certainly I've sat next to people who didn't seem to care at all about what was happening on the field. And I feel like the more expensive the seats, the more likely that is to happen. I think ultimately the problem baseball has is that they let the game get out of hand. They lost sight of the fact that the game exists because people want to watch it, because people want to enjoy it. And it doesn't exist to serve their masters with the television, the TV companies. It doesn't exist to make the players happy. It only exists as long as people want to spend money to watch it. And baseball has done very little. And yes, they've recently been sort of inching along trying to do some things, but it took a long time to get there, to realize that the game's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be entertaining. There shouldn't be 38 seconds between pitches because people don't really want to sit there and wait for that next pitch for that long. So it's going to be a process. And it's funny, one of the things that just occurs to me, that for all the talk we've heard about the coming labor negotiations and how rancorous they're going to be, essentially because of financial issues, people basically splitting up, millionaires fighting against billionaires. I haven't heard anybody talk about, well, are we going to include some measures to speed the game up a little bit, to make the game more entertaining? That doesn't even seem to come up. So I do wonder if they're anywhere close to getting on the right track.
I want to come back to that a little bit later, but you talk about process, and what I'd like to talk about now is the process of putting a book like this together. First of all, why did you pick this particular game, and could you have done basically the same book with any game?
The answer to the second question is yes. Mm-hmm. I would say that 90% of what I would have written, or what I wrote, would not have been exactly the same, but would have touched upon the same subjects. And
because you would have been able to find these points in pretty much any game.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. What we wanted in service of the narrative, we wanted a couple of particularly interesting teams, and we thought we had that with the A's because of Moneyball, and with the Astros because they seemed to be sort of the modern version, the team that best epitomized all the new analysis.
Because I think you do categorize this as a fairly meaningless game.
Well, yes, it is. It's meaningless in the sense that the A's were out of the running, and the Astros basically had clinched a playoff spot. They were still fighting for, you know, best record or home field, that sort of thing. But essentially, this was not a high stakes game. My editor in particular wanted a game that was dramatic, had some lead changes. We certainly wanted some home runs because I wanted to write about that angle. The one thing that was missing, I thought that if I just made a list of what I wanted to write about, It would be easy, relatively easy, to find the perfect game. Turns out it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So this game didn't have as many strikeouts as I would have preferred. Obviously, you only need one strikeout to write about strikeouts, so it wasn't really an issue, and there were certainly any number of pitchers who threw exceptionally hard. There just weren't a lot of strikeouts in this game. The one thing that I think some people might be surprised about is that unlike most of the other games, really all of the other games, or books that have been written in this genre, I was not actually at this game. My assumption was when I agreed to write the book, this was in early September. My assumption was that I would identify a few games, maybe a weekend series that I could attend that month, and wind up and then choose one of those games and write about it. And my editor was having none of that. He wanted to be far more selective in terms of which game I wrote about. So we wrote about a game that had just turned out had just been played a week or so earlier. We were only able to do this because of modern technology. I had access to the Home and Road radio and TV broadcasts. So I had four broadcasts that I could listen to or watch when I was reconstructing all these events.
That is fascinating, because, you know, when I was reading this, I assumed you were at the game. And then when you were talking about it just before, I thought, well, did you watch several games and then pick one out of those? But now from what I'm hearing is that this is absolutely right. This is something that could not have been done, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Right. No, it would have been tough. You know, when Dan Okren did nine innings, he went to He might have gone to more, but I know he went to a series in particular and then chose one of those games, and it turned out that game wasn't even that interesting. None of those games were dramatic, so he just wrote about a game that wound up, I think the final score was 5-2 or 6-3 or something. But he didn't need drama because of the way because of his method. In fact, he spent about 5 years working on his book, reporting it out and then doing some things after the game. And I think the game he wrote about was played in 1982. His book came out in 1985. Whereas I had 6 months to write mine. So in those respects, they're actually quite different.
Which makes you appreciate A Day in the Bleachers even more when you think that Arnold Hanau, on a whim, decided he was going to try to go into a World Series game, just yeah. walk over and buy a ticket, which you could do in those days for a pittance,
right?
And he turned it into one of the best baseball books of all time.
That's right, and it's a it's not an analytical sort of book for the most part. As you know, it's an impressionistic look at a particular game, and in many ways, a very personal book. And it's a short book, but it's also incredibly entertaining. So that's why. I sort of make pains not to suggest that I've done what Hanau did or what Okren did. They all fall into sort of a broad category, but there's a lot of room in that category for different sorts of books.
What is the difference between capital B baseball and lowercase b baseball?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I think you're the first person who's asked me that particular question, and I struggle. I wasn't even sure if I should do that in the book because it probably confused a lot of people, and you don't want to have to explain it every time. But I think it's an important distinction. Small B baseball is simply the game that's played at Yankee Stadium and at the park down the street by 8-year-olds. They're all baseball, though, and everything in between. The capital B, I made that distinction because I want people to know that there is this other thing. Most people, you know, I don't use this word in the book, but people use it all the time. They talk about the baseball industry, which I find it distasteful. It just sounds sort of ugly to me, like we're in a factory making widgets and there's grime and oil everywhere. And to me, there's, you know, the game itself transcends that sort of thing because it's a beautiful thing. That said, there's obviously a great deal of money involved, and because there's so much money, the stakes are really high for a lot of people, and especially, and really for me, baseball with the capital B. I distinguish between that and Major League Baseball, because Major League Baseball is a business entity, but baseball, the business, it doesn't serve just Major League Baseball and the owners. It also serves all the players, the union, which is 1,000-some members strong. It's those entities that essentially control how the game is played, how it's presented to fans, and you could throw the TV networks in there too if you want. But basically, for me, baseball is all the major financial stakeholders. They're the ones who make the decisions.
Well, congratulations. I've just been handed a note that's saying you've been appointed commissioner of baseball. So what is the first thing you're going to do?
The first thing I do is create a study committee with all the stakeholders, people from the union, people from the TV networks, people from MLB itself, and try to establish what would make the game more entertaining. What would make people want to watch on television? What would bring them to the ballpark and keep them? Not just for the three and a half hours, but for the next 20 or 30 years. What do they want to watch? Do they really enjoy this game that's predicated almost entirely now on strikeouts and home runs? Or do they want to see the next Ozzie Smith? Do they want to see the next Vince Coleman, to name just two from my youth? And then let's go from there. Let's figure out how we all work together and arrive at that game. Let's decide what we want the game to look like, and not just sort of let it happen, which is what we've seen so far. Let's work together to get there. That's the first thing I do. It's not a single rule change. I mean, you can come up with a 50 rule changes. Bill James just came up with 38 of them or something, changes he would make to make the game more entertaining, and that's great. But you're not going to accomplish anything with a single change. You've got to come up with a sort of a holistic strategy for creating the game that people want to watch.
You mentioned before that you didn't think you had another book in you. Now, you've been writing for blogs and websites for a long time. Do you think the culture now is just people cannot concentrate on a long project? Well, what's the acronym? TLDR, too long didn't read?
Well, no, I don't think that. I don't think that's true. I think that it's tougher to sell a book these days as an author or a prospective author. It's tougher to sell a book for good money. That is true. But the publishing industry actually is quite healthy. There are more baseball books published, and you know this better than I do. There are more baseball books published every year now than there ever have been. The trick isn't getting published. The trick is getting enough money where you can support yourself writing books about baseball, or really books about anything. And that's where I struggle. I mean, I have a book that my agent pitched this past summer about the history of the cultural history of baseball superstars, and I think that 20 years ago, that book probably sells, in part because it's easier to sell a book for real money 20 years ago, and in part because I was working for ESPN and so sort of had a built-in audience. Mm-hmm. But these days, if you're not writing a book about the Yankees or you don't have a large broadcasting platform, it's just tough to get a deal. And, you know, I can tilt at windmills all day long, but that's just the way it is right now.
And finally, you have your own podcast these days. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was incredibly honored because I've been a member of the Society for American Baseball Research for almost 35 years now, I guess. And it's been a big part of my life. I've been to a, I don't know how many national conventions, 20-some probably, and made half of my friends I probably met through Sabre. So it's been a big part of my life. Last spring, Sabre came to me and said, Rob, we would like to start a podcast as sort of a form of outreach to our members and potential members, and we'd like you to be the host. And I thought about it for about 2 seconds and said, are you kidding? I'd love to. So I get to, every week I get to choose which interesting person I'm going to talk to that week about baseball. So it's sort of a dream job. I love doing it, and we'll do it for as long as they'll let me.
I haven't been listening to it religiously, but the last one I listened to was an interview you did with Ben Mankiewicz of Turner Classic Movie, which is, you know, if I'm not reading about baseball or watching baseball movies, I'm watching Turner Classic. So it's fascinating. And it's interesting to find out that the people you don't expect, because you really don't think about them that much, but what big baseball fans they are.
Well, that's right. There are so many out there, and I chose Ben because for whatever reason, he and I have been friendly for 4 or 5 years now, probably because I noticed he followed me on Twitter or something, and so I just got in touch, and then we've kept in touch, and I thought he'd be a good guest. There are probably hundreds more like him. I just got to figure out who they are. But one of the things I've noticed is that when you get someone like Ben on the line, we could have talked for hours and hours just sure. about baseball. I didn't ask him a single thing about movies, aside from baseball movies, which, and I'm a crazy movie guy, but we just talked about baseball for 45 minutes, and I had a blast.
And I've had a blast, too, talking with you about this, unfortunately. Time has come to say goodbye. We've been talking with Rob Nyer, author of Powerball, An Anatomy of a Modern Baseball Game. Rob, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. Thank you, Ron.
And that brings us to the end of our experimental double-action baseball conversation, this time with Rob Nyer, who I'm guessing would be thrilled with being the guinea pig for a project like this. Tune in again next time when we'll have another fascinating guest from the world of baseball and pop culture. In the meantime, visit Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews on the game we love. If you have any questions or concerns, please drop me a line at ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf@gmail.com, and have a wonderful holiday, everybody.
Said, boys, I'm glad I discovered this land.